Just because you wrestle alligators for a living doesn't mean you should have the skin of one. Say goodbye to dry and cracked skin with Old Spice Super Hydration Body Wash with vitamin B3. Made for 24/7 renewing moisturization with daily use. With scents of vanilla and shea, people will think you've taken up candle making as one of your hobbies. And there is nothing wrong with that. Old Spice Super Hydration Body Wash. Shop Old Spice now.
Welcome to Hot D, the officially unofficial podcast for House of the Dragon on HBO. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And today we're talking Season 1, Episode 6, The Princess and the Queen. Aaron, which side are you on? The princess or the queen?
I guess right now I'm on the Team Princess. She seems the least objectionable. But like I also understand where Allison's coming from. Like, I think she's having a rational reaction to her life events thus far. It's just, boy, her and Sir Criston Cole are just the worst sort of, you know, festering open sores of resentment and wounded pride. And in Allison's case, a very real sense that these fucking Targaryens are going to kill them all. But yeah, what about you? Are you on to princess or the queen side here?
Oh, definitely princess. I think, yeah, the queen with like few exceptions has really bothered me this episode. Yeah, they've really done a 180 on her, because I liked her a lot coming out of the younger phase of these actors. But now here we are, and I kind of hate most everybody in the show. Everybody who's alive, anyway. Viserys might be... Viserys and Rhaenyra, I guess, are the exceptions. So, yes, I'm definitely on Team Princess.
Yeah, the death of Lyanna and Harwin Strong. I mean, those are the last Chads of Westeros, man. They're right, not but in bitter incels and fucking soulless fuckboys left in the kingdom. I don't know what we're going to do. I don't know what we're going to do.
I don't know. We might need
a
leal...
Is there a leal servant left in the land that can put their hand on this rudder and right this ship?
I don't know. I mean, is Larys leal?
I mean, I don't know.
It depends on your definition of leal, I suppose.
That's true. I don't think my definition of leal encompasses his presentation of it, but you know, what are you going to do? What did you think of this episode now that you've seen it a few more times and had time to reflect? Because I know you were kind of like maybe a little unsure.
Yeah, I mean, it's just such like a game changer, right? To use just like the most overused term. But we jump ahead like 10, 12, at least a decade. All these characters are now portrayed by different actors. We have to catch up to be fair, a board that has not changed much, it doesn't seem. We kind of pick up. It's amazing how we pick up 10 years later, and it's basically the same as it has been, as we left it at the end of last episode.
The trends have continued to go and gotten worse in a lot of cases.
Mm-hmm.
Everywhere from Viserys' health to Allison and Rhaenyra's relationship. Yeah, it's just deteriorated is what you would say.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm happy to see, like I mentioned in the instant take, the story kind of spreading out a bit. I think we're going to have a lot of new geography, and a lot of new locations and seats of power, and that should be super interesting. So I don't know. I really like this episode. I think they, despite not liking some of these characters, I think the characterization of them is very strong. And so I'm in for it.
Yeah. I was surprised to see, some prominent voices that were really up in arms about the time jump and about the cast change and about the fact that, you know, felt like we barely got to know Harwin and his relationship with Rhaenyra and Laena and her relationship with Daemon, and then they're dead. And, you know, like we missed the characters of the old princess and the old queen, even though they're in a very real sense, the same character, just portrayed by different actors. So I like, because I thought, you know, again, I've read Fire and Blood, and I'm more come away impressed that they're able to tell the story. And like, I'm impressed that they went and spent five whole episodes kind of showing the backstory and why these people became the way they are and what is motivating them, and, you know, give a sense of the betrayals and all that kind of stuff. I'm surprised that a lot of people are saying that they didn't like it. I did an informal poll on the Bald Move Twitter, and I asked people, how are we feeling about the latest time jump and character continuity on Hot D? That was the question. And 51% of the Bald Move audience, we had over 500 people, so it's a pretty representative size, said they loved it and it felt seamless. 43% says it's okay, but they missed the old cast. And just 5% said that, boo, I feel lost. So it's a minority but there is a sizable, now a lot of people in comments kind of like shaded things like, I probably more towards the awesome, but I do miss the old cast. And I think that's fair.
Yeah,
that's something fair that we can take away from it. But I, you know, the overwhelming majority of people are like, good to okay or great to good with it. And I think as if I think things are going the way they're going to go in upcoming weeks, the concern over this particular episode and the time jump is going to just fall by the wayside, because in a lot of ways, these relationships that are, you know, I'm not going to say they're not important, they yielded children, they've had impact on the characters, but they're transitional phases of these people's lives.
Mm-hmm.
You know, before the claws and the fangs come out, you know. So sure. I thought it was great. I love seeing more dragons. I love seeing Vhagar, like a truly huge dragon. We've never really seen a full grown battle dragon. And this is an old cranky one, but my God, just how immense it is and what an engine of war it is. Mm-hmm. I loved all that stuff. And I thought they did, again, a great job tossing the ball a decade into the future and having, for the most part, everything track pretty clean.
Yeah.
There's quibbles I have, but like, they're just very minor complaints and mostly stylistic choices that I think are defensible from the show's runner's perspective. So yeah. I thought this was one of the last tests for the show, until we get to the finale and see whether they can kind of end things on a rousing conclusion that also feels like it's people are going to want more, and exactly where they're going to end that. I think the show passed the last of the significant season one tests, and we'll see whether the rest of it's engaging.
Yeah, all my complaints are really, I don't like this character, and not because they're a bad character, but they're evil, or I think they're petty, or they make bad decisions. But all of that is so, it's what makes the show interesting. There are a lot of characters to not like and a lot of characters who I don't agree with what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm okay with that. And I'm really enjoying it. Are we about ready to get into the recap?
Yeah, before we do, maybe before we get to the break, we could talk because I know people are going to ask about it. The changes to the intro. You probably are already skipping this. I imagine a lot of people are. But as I predicted, they're using this as a scoreboard of sorts to kind of like keep track of the family tree as it continues. The big changes this week are Rhaenyra is getting some paths of blood from her sigil at this point, and Daemon is now on the board. His sigil is his goofy looking dragon knight helmet with the wings, and it's issuing forth its own rivers of Targaryen blood. So I thought that was cool. And again, you know, that's the coolest thing they can do with this kind of odd choice of intros for Game of Thrones. I really felt like people could have used the map when we're darting from Pentos to the Stepstones to King's Landing to, you know, like to kind of, but I don't know. And as things progress, I imagine that's going to be more and more important. I wonder if they'll stick to this blood map, family tree in future seasons, or if that's something that they might be willing to tweak.
I don't know. I would guess not, that they wouldn't want to tweak it, that they would just stick with it. You know, they had a concept, they had an idea. Yeah, fans haven't reacted to it in the best way. At least I don't think they have. But
and I will say that if this becomes a Targaryen, if this becomes a true Targaryen anthology where we're going to jump around and tell like two or three different periods of interesting Targaryen lore, that might get cool. Like if they continue to, you know, start with Aegon and just down like the waterfalling of the blood, all it that might be kind of, but it also get crazy. I mean, once you're trying to get like 20 generations of Targaryens on this thing, it's going to, the thing's going to be 5 minutes long unless they just really move through those first few levels.
And if they jump back another couple hundred years or something, what do they do with the intermediate generations? Do they skip over them? Do they?
No, I think you'd have to just
run
like
the blood all the way through.
Yeah, I mean, we're running the blood from Aegon down. Now we only have about 100, going on 120 years of Targaryen history to account for. And if we, you know, go into the Blackfyre Rebellion, you're going to add another 100 years. If you go to Duncan, you know, there's, if you do Robert's Rebellion, you're going to add another, you know, 150 years on top of that. So, like, it might get crazy, but I don't know. I kind of secretly hope that they go back to the map. I think, you know, update the trappings, update the celestial orrery or whatever the hell that, you know, thing, the overarching kind of mechanism of the map. Update that a little bit, make it nicer. But yeah, I want to bop around Westeros and see where we're going. I want to see, you know, we're at Harrenhal. We were at the Vale last week. We're at King's Landing. We're at Pintos. Like, it'd be nice to ground. You know, like I had the questions like Pintos, where the fuck is that? Where is that in relation to the Stepstones? Is that like, are they hemmed in by the Stepstones? I would have.
Dragonstone, Driftmark, like all those places would have been nice to see.
Yes. Yes, it would have. And you wouldn't have those questions about like, oh, why are all this jet packing? It's like, dude, it's literally across the street, so to speak. You know, like, yeah,
it would help sell the importance of the Stepstones, I think, in a lot of ways. Too.
Yeah. Because you could see how it kind of literally partitions off like the south of Essos from the western part of Essos and kind of cuts the trade lanes in half. And yeah, so other than that, other than kind of relitigating the credit sequence, let's talk about the episode.
There's still lots of hot D left to talk about. We'll be right back after the break.
Your spring is about to get a lot more power with the Home Depot. Get gas-like power from mowing, trimming, and blowing with the Ryobi 18-volt OnePlus system starting at just $89. Mowing power that can take on a third of an acre with one charge. Trimming power with up to 2 hours of runtime. And blowing power with 110 miles per hour of clearing force. All on one interchangeable battery. Get cordless gas-like power for the entire lawn with the Ryobi 18-volt OnePlus system. Only at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
This episode is brought to you by State Farm. You might say all kinds of stuff when things go wrong, but these are the words you really need to remember. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. They've got options to fit your unique insurance needs, meaning you can talk to your agent to choose the coverage you need, have coverage options to protect the things you value most, file a claim right on the State Farm mobile app, and even reach a real person when you need to talk to someone. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
And now, back to Hot D. All right, we start off with Rhaenyra giving birth to a boy. The queen asks to have the baby brought to her, and Laenor helps Rhaenyra up to the queen's chambers. In her chambers, Viserys visits the baby. Laenor names the baby Joffrey, which annoys Rhaenyra.
What a badass Rhaenyra is. She pushes out this kid and within seconds is climbing multiple steps of stairs to go present her latest bastard to the queen. I was just thinking, you know, because they keep on making this theme that the birthing bed is a woman's battlefield. Do you know how many top 10 debates I've seen over best Westerosi swordsman over the years? How many panels I've seen at conventions?
Okay.
Where... are the top five most powerful wombs? I want to know. I want to know who's got the genuine Valyrian steel birth canal that can just... And there's a spoiler. It's Alysanne Targaryen. 13 kids over 29 years.
Damn.
Greatest of all time.
I was going to say, it's definitely not Lena. It's not Emma.
No, and well, you know, there's a, it's not the size of the fight and the dog, it's the dog and a fight, and I don't know, something, yeah, but yeah. It gets uncomfortable when we start talking about, you know, I just, that's a weak womb, woman died in childbirth, what are you going to do, you know, career cut short. I don't know if that's a good look, but if you want to nominate runners-up to Alysanne Targaryen, hot D at baldmove.com, we can have an impromptu womb-off in the...
Sure.
In the feedback section. And two men will preside over it. And this is entirely not problematic and super fun. Anyway, yeah, they just really showed, like, I mean, it's like they're trying to get her dressed. She's like, well, no, afterbirth coming. Mm-hmm. Squeeze that out. And then she's,
oh, this she is just, a Game of Thrones birth the way, right? Like, it's as visceral and gory as you can expect from this.
Yeah,
universe.
Like they haven't even cut the cord. Like they show her coming out of the confrontation and she's literally leaving a trail of blood, which I think is kind of evocative of the credit sequence.
There we go. Change the credit sequence to that. Just a bunch of Targaryens walking around, bleeding on the floor.
Targaryen women walking around the Red Keep, leaving their trails of blood, connecting to their... Yeah.
Perfect.
That's another fun tweak we've got for the show.
Jesus.
Do you have any thoughts? We covered this in the instant take, but I also know that a lot of people don't, you know, listen to the instant take because, hey, the full one's coming out in just a couple days. Did you have any thoughts on why Alicent wanted the baby the second it dropped?
Yeah,
I mean, new baby dropping.
I think it's clear at this point that she's like checking to see if this is a Targaryen baby or if this is a Harwin baby.
I noticed that she had summoned the king to her chamber so he would arrive approximately the same time the baby does. And I'm almost certain that she just wanted to be like, see, brown hair. Because that's the first thing she did. She pulled back that kid's cap and like, fucking brown hair. Yeah. Fucking brown hair. I knew it.
I don't think there was any physical threat here. Because, like I said in the instant take, she's already got two kids. There was no foul play with them. So, I don't think the queen is going to drop this one. But
after multiple watches, I don't think it was a physical threat. I think it's like later on when Laenor says, "Wait, we're leaving." I thought we want to keep Alicent from pouring honeyed words into your father's ear. I think what she didn't want to happen was the baby to be presented, and she goes on her. Look at his bastard tirade to Viserys. She wanted to be there so that it would head all that off, and it kind of did. Alicent got in the little dig about keep trying, Sir Laenor. Eventually, one will look like you.
Yeah, all out on this war. I mean, if you wanted to like put a stamp on where Alicent is at this point, yeah, she's still looking for the way to undermine Rhaenyra.
And point of fact. You know, you look good. Look, these are Harwin's kids. I'm not gonna front. But point of fact, to Viserys's favor, some geneticist on r/House of the Dragon drew out the Punnett squares, putting in Oros Baratheon in the family tree that leads to Rhaenyra, and putting in I forget who the black haired brown haired person was on Corlys's side, the kind of, and if you do the three or four generations in the Punnett squares, like, it's entirely plausible, if not probable, that they could have three brown haired children in a row, just the way the recessive and dominant alleles work in those situations. So someone did the Punnett squares, and it's not unheard of, although I will say these kids look a lot like Harwin. I mean, they got the same like kind of olive skin coloration, the hairstyle. They're very, very strong looking children.
Is it possible that the oldest of these children is Sir Criston Coles?
Does that time work out?
I don't know.
I don't know. I honestly don't know.
It depends on how fast that marriage happened.
Right. And I that's one thing I didn't go back and actually add the dates up, because they did cover about, it felt like to me, like 3 or 4 years of kind of like book kind of details and anecdotes in this one episode, and kind of move things around so everything kind of lines up at this most interesting. Cause, you know, they're essentially saying, well, the last 10 or 15 years were the same as the, you know, it's like Alicent just kept on getting more bitter and more puritanical. Criston Cole got even more bitter and butthurt. and Rhaenyra was against this backdrop, just still trying to YOLO like her uncle. Like, I'm just going to fuck who mm-hmm. I want. That was the deal. I got the marriage. I got the heirs. And not... I wonder, because I wonder if Rhaenyra regrets any of this now, that she wasn't a little bit more circumspect in how she conducted these love affairs.
Yeah, I mean, she's definitely tipping her hand. Having three brown-haired children, I think, is kind of eyebrow-raising, regardless yeah. of how many times you want to look at the Punnett squares.
Yeah, especially since there's no geneticist in Westeros as of yet.
yeah, everybody can look at that. As Lionel says later, people have eyes, boy. Mm-hmm. I don't know if she regrets it necessarily, but I think she realizes it was a mistake.
Especially since it seems like everything's kind of breaking loose. Like, I don't know how careful yeah. they were before, but like here, Harwin is not super careful about, he's not exactly Jaime-esque in his ability to shut off his fatherly feelings towards his bastard children. Mm-hmm. You've got Laenor finally getting around to nominating his boyfriend as the kid. So it's like, it feels like as Rhaenyra is kind of awaking to the threat, everyone around her is like getting very sloppy and mm-hmm. it's causing her to have a lot of stress. I thought that was an interesting detail.
Naming this kid Joffrey, it's funny. You know, you definitely can't name the firstborn Joffrey. I think you probably need a backup heir that's not named Joffrey. But number three, I can name that one, Joffrey. Come on.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's exactly the mental calculus that he put into it. But it's just everything's kind of like stacking up, you know. I wonder about Viserys, because Viserys is genuinely overjoyed at the healthy birth of another son. He thinks it's just like, he's just got the one arm, he's cradling it, and he's like, oh, you're going to be strong, you're going to be a fierce knight, oh yes. And he just clearly dotes over these children, and like, it was painful to watch throughout the episode his hopes of, you know, everybody, we're one house, we're one family, and we're going to get together, and even if the mothers are kind of at odds, like, I've got this strategy to get these boys, you know, together and be fast friends, and it just all goes to shit. And by the end of the episode, he's weeping over his dead wife's ring and wondering, you know, Aemma, where did it all go wrong? Mm-hmm. Poor Viserys.
Yeah. I mean, he's still alive, which is sort of surprising for another 10 years here. He's looking awful, though. I mean, as you pointed out in the instant take, he's lost his entire left arm. He can't walk very fast or very far. He has to be coddled quite a bit. So, yeah,
his face has aged 30, 40 years and 10. His teeth are kind of like gone rotten, and his hair is falling out. It's not a good look.
No.
Speaking of changing looks, many people pointed out that, you know, now we see the king's bedchambers. Alicent has gotten rid of all those erotic tapestries and paintings and mosaics, and now they're all tasteful tile patterns.
Travesty.
She's really, really got the faith of the seven. She's really into chastity and purity and uprightness and moral rectitude now. That's what she's clinging to.
Sure. Why not?
And I mentioned it also in Instant Cast. I thought it was good growth from Rhaenyra that, like, I feel like Rhaenyra 10 years ago in this circumstance would have bitten the head off of any lord that had the thoughtlessness to congratulate her in this state. But you know, she's got the Lord Caswell here, who's a minor lord in the Reach, and he's offering congratulations and service, and she, I think, as gracefully as she can in the condition she's in, accepts it and is not a complete dick to him. So I think that's a little bit of growth in leadership here.
The other bit of information we get catching us up is that Kristen is still alive and he is serving as Alicent's Kingsguard.
And the look exchange between him and Laenor. Like, I said I was going to watch that, and it's like, yeah, there's very definitely, hey, I killed your boyfriend. Yeah, I haven't forgot, fucker. Bad blood. Bad blood between in this household.
And you stole my girlfriend, that thing, too.
That's, well, yeah. I don't know if there's any of that, because I don't think he thinks he's put a finger on his girlfriend, but
Well,
he's got that beef. He's got that beef with Harwin. And boy,
stole the relationship part of it for sure.
True.
Kristen desperately wanted that and didn't get it because of.
And I guess also, I guess he might blame, like, not that he had sex with her necessarily, but more of like, if it weren't for you, we could have had our little dalliance, you know? I don't know.
Yeah, I think so.
I don't know if that's enough. Like, I don't know if that was that would ever be enough for Sir Kristen. I think that he wanted to make this dishonorable thing he did honorable by essentially marrying the girl. And that just wasn't ever going to fly. What an idiot.
What an idiot. There is a hilarious line in this. We talked about how this show doesn't have much comedy, but Rhaenyra saying, I think I called the midwife a cunt, is pretty freaking funny.
Yeah. Yeah. When Viserys asked her if it, I hope it wasn't too difficult to labor. Like, yeah. Yeah.
I like both the fact that she called her that and the fact that she can't quite remember as well.
It's like there's actually a lot of fun, I think, sneaky funny lines. Like, Damon's got a good burn about Sir Laenor. Allison gets her licks in here. I thought it's Allison's hesitation before she calls Rhaenyra's children plain faced sons, because she clearly wants to say something extremely unkind and probably obscene, but she's basked in the light of the Seven, and that's unbecoming. The mother, the mother and the father wouldn't want her saying that kind of stuff, Jim. So
yeah, Kristen will say it for her. All right. Harwin holds his new son, Joffrey, for the first time. And we see that he and Rhaenyra already have two other children together, though the children don't know that he's their father. At least they're not certain of it. But by the end of the episode,
there'll be some suspicions before the episode's over. These boys joining Joffrey is her eldest, Jacerys, who they will be frequently called Jace, and Lucerys, who will be called Luke.
Jace and Luke. Okay.
And I don't know. I thought this was a cute scene. These boys, you know, like fussing over this egg and saying they'd picked one that's special for the brother. And I thought it was cute. And Laenor playing his part and ushering the kids so that, you know, the baby mama and the baby daddy can spend some time together. And, you know, him giving the kind of look to Harwin of like, yeah, this is all cool. As successful a bearded relationship as you could probably, other than the unfortunate Punnett Square part of it. The most successfully and happily and contented bearded relationship you can hope for in Westeros.
All right, let's head over to the Dragon Pit, where Jacerys learns how to train his baby dragon. Then the dragonless Aemond is given a surprise by his brother and nephews. What is their relationship, the kids? So it's the grandchildren of Alicent, so they would be half nephews.
The grandchildren of Alicent.
Well, no, the grandchildren the of Viserys and by marriage Alicent.
What?
Right, because Rhaenyra is the daughter.
Oh, right,
because
she's now her mother. Right. Yes. So they're.
Step uncles,
are they? I don't fucking know. Once removed, yeah, sure.
I don't know the terms.
Cousin, half brothers. I'm not. No, they're not half brothers. They would be half cousins, half uncles.
Half uncles weird. Sounds right. Yeah, there's some like uncle nephew. Ish relationship going on
when the family tree has as few branches as the Targaryens did. It gets weird.
Yeah. Anyway, it turns out to be a pig dressed up like a dragon, and then afterward Aemond ventures into the area beneath the dragon pit where he encounters a dragon and runs.
Oh,
because it's terrifying.
I thought it was, this is kind of a cool scene. Jace is being bonded to his dragon and like he's excited and he's confident, but still when like Vermax, his dragon, kind of gets feisty, it's still scary, and the dragon master's there to like make sure he doesn't retreat, show weakness in front of the dragon. I like the detail of like the oldest dragon master is just all fucked up. He's got like rips and tears and burn marks on his face because this is a dangerous profession, man. And we also, they established that Aegon, the eldest of the boys of Viserys and Alicent, is already got a dragon, Sunfire, which we haven't seen. I'm excited to see it, though, because according to Archmaester Gildan in the Fire and Blood book, it's the most beautiful dragon the world has ever known, and it breathes golden fire. I don't think we've ever seen, other than the zombie ice dragon version, anything any other than just like conventional fire breathing, but like canonically, yeah, like Balerion breathed black fire, black flames. That's would be wild to see. And this guy breathes golden flames. I'm kind of curious to see what's the most beautiful dragon in Westeros look like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that'll be cool. I thought this was another very funny scene. Like, this joke is mean, but it is funny. The especially the nickname that they give this, the Pink Dread.
It's a Pink Dread.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought it was fun. It was also cool that, like, there doesn't seem to be any inherent animosity between the two factions of children here. That, you know, they're like mutually playing a prank on Aemond, who's kind of a little bit more of an introvert compared to the others, and is a little bit more maybe more mature, and thus picked on. But there's not like, you know, hey, we're beating up on the strong bastards versus the trueborn. It seems at this point they more or less get along. There's more fighting within the groups than there is without the groups.
Yeah, I think this is part of, you know, the theory of House of the Dragon here about like what the parents are putting on the children, right? Because left to their own devices, they'd probably be friends. But they're going to have all this baggage thrust upon them. Like, Allison's doing her damnedest here to say, don't be friends with these kids because they're going to eventually be your enemies. Well, why?
Right.
You don't have to be. That's right. Coming from the parents.
No, it's sad. The other thing is, I'll probably be talking about this in the Maester's Corner. There is an interesting connection between this mysterious dragon we see at deep in the dragon pits that Aemond goes to visit, and the main Game of Thrones era, which I'm going to tease now and talk about on Thursday. But it's okay. It's a lot of people are saying that this is probably going to turn out to be the dragon Dreamfire. To give, you know, maybe some book readers and some lore people some insight on where I'm going with that. But yeah, we'll be talking about that on Thursday in the Maester's Corner.
Sounds good. All right, let's go over to Aemond running back to his mother to report what the kids did to him. Allison then runs to Viserys to tell on his grandchildren and ends up bringing up the fact that Rhaenyra's kids look nothing like her. Viserys dismisses it with a dubious anecdote and tells her never to speak of it again. And afterwards, she vents to Kristen.
Yeah. Helena is looking at this centipede or millipede, and she is saying a bunch of stuff about it. And there is some, you know, we've introduced, there's been a lot of Targaryen dreamers and people that have prophetic gifts. And people are wondering if there's a lot to talk about. Probably, again, we'll get to this in the lore part of the next podcast. But some people are wondering if this is, a far-reaching prophecy, because she says the last ring has no legs, if that's a veiled hint towards Bran the Broken. Like if there is some kind of, you know, the band's generations of kings and people that hold the Iron Throne, including all, you know, not just the main sequence, but all the different rebellions and stuff. If I got to do the math on that and see if it adds up. But I think that's an interesting detail. And then, you know, all the other things she's muttering, we'll keep an eye on to see if there's any fulfillments that line up. Because it seems like they're definitely going somewhere with this Targaryen mysticism.
Mm-hmm. I'm looking at this scene with Allison and Viserys, and I'm trying to figure out how much Viserys realizes Allison's goals. And I think the answer is zero. When she brings this up, Viserys acts like it's more concern for, you know, the lineage. But clearly, like when Viserys says, like, the consequences of your accusation would be dire, that's what she wants. It's exactly what she wants, is dire consequences for Rhaenyra and her children. So,
yeah.
But I don't think Viserys realizes that at all.
No, I think he is dismissive of Alicent. He is, you know, thinks that this is just a woman overacting over nothing and causing problems for nothing. But he's also vexed because he clearly has a hard time saying no to her. You know, she has continued to wrap him around her little finger to the point that she can be insolent and dismissive, insulting back to him. And all he can do is like, oh, my queen, no, don't. You know, he's powerless.
Yeah, I was looking on second watch through this to see what I thought might happen if Rhaenyra hadn't been here for 10 years. If, you know, the pouring of honey into Viserys' ear by Alicent would have had any real effect. I come away with, I don't know, because I think Viserys is fairly strong-willed sometimes. And other times he's like just willing to listen to whatever anybody around him says. So like,
but would he be strong enough to withstand the years long onslaught of the queen just steadily, not just the honey, but the vinegar too? You know,
here's the one thing I wish we had seen in this episode is sort of Rhaenyra's defense of this. Rhaenyra whispering back, because Alicent gets all the opportunities to whisper, as far as I can tell. But Rhaenyra, I know she does in the small council meeting, put up a little bit of a fight.
She attacks her with substance. Yeah.
Well, I want to see the private moments is really what it comes down to, because I feel like that's where you do most of your swaying.
But what is, so let me ask you this. What would be that attack? Because I think the thing that I understand about Alicent is she has put herself above reproach. I mean, you could talk about old history, like, well, you took in Sir Criston Cole and he beat the fuck out of this dude for no good reason. And she could come back with like, well, you know, the mother's merciful. But like, she is living like not all of her children are manifestly Viserys's children.
Sure.
You know, they are Targaryen with a capital T, even though they should be less Valyrian than Rhaenyra and Laenor's kids.
And it's pretty easy to prove to yourself that you've been sleeping with your bride. Yeah.
Right. I don't know what she says that would like affect that. What whisper could she say about Alicent? You know, she doesn't like the Targaryen. She doesn't like the dragon porn stuff. You know, like most of the stuff that she could say are not things that would work. They might appeal to someone like Daemon. Like she could talk shit in a way that might appeal to people like Daemon. But like for the people of the realm who are all largely Faith of the Seven adjacent, like the Targaryens are just weird, man. And they're not kind of natively on their side.
Yeah, no, totally. You might be able to make unfavorable comparisons to Aemma. I think that would work pretty well with Viserys. He seems to be holding a candle.
Oh,
for
you're
her.
Saying actually direct to the king. I thought she was. You were talking a whisper. As you're talking about the way the court would whisper about.
No,
children.
No. I want to see the honey she's pouring in his other ear.
Yeah,
is what I'm getting at here. That she couldn't do from Dragonstone.
I will say that you can maybe attack Alicent's kids and just how like, okay, well, her mother is so righteous. Why is Aegon jerking it out the 7-story window of the Red Keep? You know,
sure. Yeah.
Why are the small folk getting dragon seed all over them at noon? I don't know. Cause like Viserys loves his grandkids. I don't know. Talking shit about him would help.
Totally. But, yeah, that's what I mean. I just want to see like the defense she's been mounting other than small council stuff, because everybody does that in the small council.
And also like the other thing I thought they did really good in the time jump is when Laenor is like escorting her from the birthing chamber to the queen's chamber there. He's saying like, I thought we were past this. Like there's been periods of them coming up with an understanding with Alicent. And then, you know, Alicent kind of because it sounds like she pushed this and the king said, I don't want to hear about this anymore. So she has to have another inciting event, and here another brown-haired bastard is the perfect one. So she's back on. I think you're supposed to understand that she's never stopped privately, but publicly she's back on her bullshit.
Yeah.
In a big way.
Yeah. And I look at, I guess let's go over to that scene where Alicent catches Aegon in a very compromising position. Like you said, jerking it out the keep window there. Sets him straight about his relationship with his brother, Rhaenyra's children, and the realm. Because she does not seem to have done anything yet to really prepare him for what she hopes will be his rise to power. Or what she expects will be you know, the realm pushing him to that. Like, this almost feels like a first conversation they've had about this, because it sort of seems to catch him by surprise. Yeah.
He's either really dumb. Well, I mean,
and he's a kid. I get it. I would have ignored what my parents said too. At that age.
Sometimes you got to tell them a time or 10 before they get it. But like, no, totally. The way he is just like completely flat footed by, she's like, well, you understand that she could move to block off any challenge to her. And he's like, well, I just won't challenge it. And she's like, psh, fool.
Yeah.
Just by living and breathing, you are a challenge.
He should already know this, right? And that's the thing that felt a little bit weird in this scene to me.
Yeah, I wonder why she decided right now is the time to start listening to her dad and training Aegon to take command. Is it that she thought that like the king would eventually see reason, and with three black, you know, and he's going on this, oh, well, you know, I had a black mare and a silver stallion, it was a chestnut, that she's like, well, he's just not. And like that catty little bitch session she has with Sir Criston, where he's just feeding in her and he's, oh, your father knows, my queen. Mm-hmm. And he makes excuses for her because she's brazen and relentless. Asked you to have sex one time. I don't know if that's relentless, dude. she played keep away with your helmet for like 10 seconds and then you were boning. I get it. But I don't know. And again, the contrast between how hyper fixated she is in correctness and decency with like Sir Criston Cole, he can't even call Rhaenyra a spoiled cunt without being corrected. And then Aegon here, you know, being in the, and his mom doesn't even bat an eye.
Yeah.
But yeah. Dressed. And he's like, that's the other thing. It's like there's also elements of because I think Viserys knows, like, you know, when she says you're the boys bullied Aemon, and he's like, oh, probably Aegon put him up to it, huh? Mm-hmm. And she's like, what? No, it's those kids of Rhaenyra's is doing it all. But it's Aegon.
Yeah. But then she goes to Aegon and is full of, you know, fire here, because I think she realizes, he was an instigator. And it lends some credence to the idea later in the episode where Larys is like, oh, well, you would certainly give a little bit of leeway to your kids. And she's like, no, I wouldn't. And I kind of believe that, because when, you know, Viserys brings up, hey, it might have been Aegon, she's like, oh, yeah, it probably was Aegon. Let me go roast him.
Yeah.
So I
also thought
it was
interesting that like they did a good job of kind of poising Aegon to where he's flat footed, but he's also not thought, because like he couldn't even remember his cousin, nephew, half uncle's name. He's like, oh, you know, it was Jason and the other one. Like, he's so incurious about the guy, and they see each other every day, and he hasn't bothered to learn the littler one's name. Which, and he's not like he's a baby. He's like, what, 5 or 6? He's I thought that was kind of telling that, like, he's not evil, but he's very moldable. A lot of people were saying Joffrey. I think that's being pretty unfair to Aegon. Like, I don't know what he
Joffrey, like that Joffrey Lannister. Like,
yeah, Joffrey Lannister.
Do people remember how shitty Joffrey Lannister was?
How shitty he started off as. Like, I'm not saying clearly I don't think he's crossbowing sex workers levels of, but like, he's, what has he done bad? He's bullied his younger brother. Holy shit. What psychopathic war criminal would bully a younger brother? And he jerked it out the balcony. That's stuff that you got to redirect that energy in other places. But like, it's also something a 14-year-old weirdo would do, you know. It's not psychotic behavior.
No.
Whereas Joffrey was, you know, doing psychotic, was dissecting kittens alive. They talk about.
Yeah, I mean, Joffrey in that scenario would have made what's his name, Luke, Jace,
fuck the pig.
Yeah, or kill it and like wear its skin or something. Like,
yeah,
it would have been a totally different scenario with Joffrey there.
It would have been scary. It wouldn't have been like, you know, hazing. It would have been scary and dehumanizing. Instead,
every
of
time
like
somebody's
poking,
mean to somebody, you can't just point a finger and say Joffrey. That's Joffrey was a true psychopath.
Yes,
a sociopath. Yeah. All of the above path.
Yes, except for an empath.
Yeah.
He wasn't that.
The one thing we didn't talk about here is that Viserys is still working on his gigantic model, and it has grown. It's now so big. Taking up his entire chambers. I mean, it's become his life. I think it's representative of that, right?
And he's also like, he's sitting and doing work now. Like, it's, I think he always did that, but like, he's got someone helping him, but he's also doing little details on his own. Yeah, it's like, this is what he does, man. It's like, old Valeria is damn near scale model. Like, it's got this big old stadium now, and it's just sprawling. Yeah.
Do they have records of what it actually looked like, or is he kind of riffing?
Surely.
Do you think?
Surely. I mean, this was like if Rome had exploded, like, mm-hmm. in the 3rd century. Like, even if that had been true, like, you'd have so many records and pictures and frescoes at the surround. Yeah. So, like, all of Essos kind of still either fondly or less fondly remembers, you know, old Valeria. And
it's funny that you bring up Rome, because there is like a scale model of Rome. I forget where it is, but it's in a museum somewhere, and it's this gigantic room that's full. It has like this outer area where you can walk around it and just look at it.
Is it in Rome?
I don't know. I can't remember.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I wonder if that's the inspiration, because, yeah, it's...
it could be.
They often say that, like, you're supposed to understand old Valeria is kind of like the Roman Empire in how it just had a stranglehold over Essos.
Yeah. Makes sense. Okay, let's move on to Daemon and Laena. They get to ride some dragons together, and then they attend a feast at Pentos, where they're offered a castle, lands, and wealth in exchange for posting up their dragons in Pentos to defend against the Triarchy, who is apparently allied with Dorne. Laena wants to refuse, but Daemon says, "We'll consider it."
Yeah, this is Caraxes and Vhagar putting on an air show over in Pentos. I was excited to see Vhagar. We saw a little bit of her in the trailer, but I just love how like lumbering and huge she is. I don't know what's going on with her saddle. It looks like it's a fishnet that they have thrown over her back. In fact, but that might be kind of like the Valerian. You know, this is a more nautical kind of saddle.
Yes, I think so. Because if you look at Daemon's saddle, he's got a very strappy saddle.
Like
it's all a bunch of buckles and leather straps and what you think of as like an actual saddle. And hers looks like it's attached with ropes, which gives it a very nautical vibe.
I like how Vhagar's wings are kind of tattered. There's some holes in it. She's got some battle damage. Looks like her skin is kind of thick and warty. And even her facial features, there's almost like a beard. Like she's just so old that she's kind of getting whiskery and stuff. I just thought it's a great design. And golly, it's going to be interesting if they ever get her to take her into combat.
I like Daemon's look mom, no hands move here. Really trying to impress Laena, his dragon riding skills.
Like we said on the instant take, there is red meat for the Targaryen fireproof truthers out there.
He's obviously fireproof. Obviously. He has to be. This is dragon fire. This isn't just like this isn't like jumping through a campfire. This is dragon fire, man. It melts castles.
I've seen a man in a sequin jumpsuit pilot a motorcycle through a ring of fire, and there was no Targaryen blood involved, Jim. I mean,
and he was just as drunk as when I jumped through the campfire.
Yeah, I don't know. I was like, I don't know. Can you, if you hold your breath, can you go? But he didn't even get singed.
Nothing.
It's pretty. I don't know how he got burnt by the fucking flaming arrow, but maybe they're just impervious to dragon fire.
There you go.
Maybe that's what it is. Any dragon based
psychic connection to their dragons, and the dragon fire can't hurt them.
Those candles that dragon candles. Viserys, they dragon fat. Yeah, dragon tallow candles.
Mm-hmm.
That's why dragon earwax. There you go.
He's harvested able to create candles.
He's able to tank that damage just like Daemon tanked that fireball.
Mm-hmm.
There's still lots of hot D to talk about. We'll be back right after the break.
This is NASCAR driver Tony Breidinger inviting you to make a pit stop at Raising Cane's for craveable, hand-battered, cooked-to-order chicken fingers.
Chicken up.
Crispy, crinkle-cut fries.
Hot potato coming through.
Buttery Texas toast.
Toast walking.
And secret Cane's sauce.
Topping off now.
Turbocharge your chicken fingers and get them even faster when you order online or with the Raising Cane's app.
Go, go, go!
Raising Cane's chicken fingers. one love. Raising Cane's is not affiliated with NASCAR.
Lately, I've been all about my new Aveeno skincare routine. I start each day with a daily moisturizing body wash in the shower, which feels like creamy goodness and doesn't dry out my skin. After, I slather on the daily moisturizing body lotion for 24 hours of clinically proven hydration. This powerful combo gives me 2 times the moisture in 2 easy steps, thanks to both nourishing oat formulas, leaving my skin feeling soft and smooth. Shop Aveeno now at Target.
And now, back to Hot D. Do you want to hear some stuff about Pintos?
Not yet. I want to say how hilarious it is. That just like 2 episodes ago, I think, sure. Damon pulls this flyby stuff on a boat, and it nearly capsizes the damn boat, like a huge boat, the queen's boat, or the king's boat. And here he does a flyby on a couple of people, and it doesn't even muss their hair, which I found to be interesting.
People aren't sailing vessels with giant sails to catch wind, but no, I thought maybe it should have knocked him over too.
or at least hit him with a blast of a fan or something, gust of wind to really shake him around. But
this is the 747 of dragons too doing it, you know.
Yeah. Anyway, let's talk about Pintos now.
So we've seen Pintos before. Pintos is where Illyrio hosted the other Viserys Targaryen that we know, the real shitter that was the elder brother of Daenerys. And he gifted them the 3 eggs, and Khal Drogo rode up and decided if he wanted to take Dany as his broodmare. And so that's we've already been to Pintos once. And it's interesting that Pintos, this is the Prince of Pintos. This is a show only figure. Regio Haratus. But the Prince of Pintos is this position that's picked out by the Magisters of Pintos, who are the real ruling power. And there's largely a figurehead who does essentially officiates feasts and opens festivals and things like that. But hilariously, anytime Pintos suffers a setback, like a famine, or if they lose an important battle in a war, the Magisters drag the prince out and sacrifice him and be like, "Look at this fucker. Almost ran us into ground, but we're now going to pick a new prince and things are going to be better." So it's like they've got this permanent scapegoat.
Yeah.
But it's also the closest city in Essos to King's Landing. It's at the westernmost part of Essos, just across the Narrow Sea, which might explain their kind of cultural ties and why they kind of keep allying. The other thing about Pintos is that they lost a major war against Braavos in the century prior. And part of that armistice treaty is they agreed to never have a standing army, to never hire sellswords, and to have no more than 20 warships, because Braavos is like, we're never going to do this shit again. So Pintos, even though it's very wealthy, it's also very vulnerable. And I felt like this was a clever way for the Magisters to send their kind of decoy guy to float this offer. And it's not they're not hiring Daemon. They're just saying, like, we want you to live in this fancy house.
Yeah.
And with your 3 huge battle dragons. And it's not an army. It's not a navy.
No,
it's just
not boats.
You're just an honored guest. And, you know, if someone had come in to push our shit in, maybe they'd have 3 dragons to deal with. But Braavos, he didn't say nothing about that. I thought it was kind of an interesting political move for them to shore up a bunch of, especially since their neighbors to the south, Lys and Tyros and Myr are gearing up to do the Battle of the Stepstones Part 2.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's a prudent move. I don't know if Daemon's going to go for it. I still have no real indication by the end of this episode.
Is he more or less likely to do it now that the one person in his life who is saying it's a bad move is gone? Is he inspired now to live more like a dragon lord since she fucking went out like one?
Totally.
Or is he... Because, man, we'll talk about this later, but the thing that really broke my heart is the fact that, like, he had nothing to comfort his daughters. Mm-hmm. Like, they're there in obvious need, and he just turns his back and walks away. Like, is he just going to completely abandon his post here?
He might feel a call of duty at some point with Rhaenyra getting mixed up in all this. That's what I'm wondering about. I'm looking at the time that they spent setting up, you know, young Rhaenyra and I guess, basically looking the same Damon. And that all seemed to be just connecting them spiritually. And so I have to imagine when the shit hits the fan, Damon might come running to help Rhaenyra, is my guess here. And, you know, not for nothing, they've both had their lovers killed and they were kind of hot for each other 10 years ago. So who knows what happens with that? But I can see him being called back to Westeros by that, just loyalty to Rhaenyra.
It does seem that fatherhood and maybe being married to Lena has changed him a little bit, or maybe just age and being a little older and being kicked out of Westeros for real has, because I think their relationship's interesting because she knows that she's not exactly everything that he wanted, but also that he genuinely loves and admires her. And like, if they could just be fierce dragon riders 24/7, like he probably wouldn't have this ennui. But since there's really no outlet, I mean, they're just doing like stunt shows for hire. Like it kind of wears on him, especially now that he's over in Essos and he's in these great libraries. Like we mentioned, like Essos would just have archive after archive, repository after repository about the old Valyrian Empire in the way that Westeros, even at the Citadel, probably wouldn't. You know, all these primary sources and art, and he's clearly enjoying teaching his eldest daughter, who's already a dragon rider, Valyrian, and the histories and all that. But like, he's also just, you know, he's got no outlet for wanting to be a dragon lord, you know?
Let me ask you this. There's a scene, I think it's later on, where Lena talks with her daughter, who is, you know, sad about not having a dragon, trying to hatch this dragon egg. Is there any chance that she takes her mother's dragon? Because she's talking about like the weird, you know, situational ways that people can get dragons, right? And her mother dying and leaving one of the biggest dragons and oldest dragons unridden, I think would be a sort of roundabout way for her to fall into that.
I'd have to say mildly interesting and all that, but you know, Vhagar does have a vacancy in her dragon riding slot. So, and they did, you know, there was a, like, I guess you could see that is if you're right, you could say that's foreshadowing where her mom's like, you know, I was a dragonless person and didn't have anything until I took an interest in Vhagar, and who knows what can happen with you. Like that could be something interesting there. I thought it was a cool, like that the, when we first met Lena, she was asking Viserys about Vhagar and that she was kind of like whereabouts unknown, just kind of roaming the
Is that the same dragon? So yeah. She found that dragon somewhere?
She found that dragon, hunted it down, and swung her leg over it sometime in the intervening years. I thought that was cool.
I thought that might be the case, but I wasn't certain. Huh.
Yeah, she's been obsessed with the dragons and that one in particular, and she didn't have a long life, but boy, she burned pretty bright, it seems.
So this is one of the dragons that's seen old Valyria? The last living being? The last living creature?
It's the last... No, I think Balerion's the last one that was actually hatched in Valyria. I think Vhagar was hatched over on Dragonstone. But she is the last of the dragons that Aegon and his two sisters rode.
Okay. I thought they had framed it as...
Yeah, this was the personal dragon of Visenya, the more warriorish woman of them.
Okay. Interesting. There's a couple other interesting things happening here. I found it colored in Damon a little bit more. I think he's flirting with the server here. He like grabs the server's arm and like whispers into his ear and then smiles at him and looks back at him as he walks away.
That was weird because I had never caught a hint that Damon might be, you know, as changeable as the flame.
Sure. But they seem to be saying that.
There was something there, and it might have been like, because he's also an aficionado of wine, so maybe he was like asking, like, hey, what am I drinking? But he
can I get the good stuff? You guys got any of that red wine?
Yeah, I don't like this amber shit. Like he might have been, but I definitely thought that guy was portrayed as like cute, and the Damon was portrayed as appreciative of it.
I think so. Yeah.
So we'll see.
And I like the little touches they're doing with the wine here, where he winces when he takes a drink of it. You know, Because you'll find out later, yeah, he hates this stuff.
And I know I mentioned that I think he does love and admire Lena, but he also is dismissive of her, literally. Like, you know, they had, you know, he listened to her concerns and he kisses her on her belly and he's like, why are you still here? You know, and that was kind of hard to square with the but I think it's also kind of like probably how a Lord Husband would act in that. It's like, yeah, I listened to you. I didn't belt you across the face or scream at you. Now take off.
Right. We're kind of burying the lead here because it's shown that they already have two children together and they're about to have a third. Apparently Damon, not as impotent as everyone thought.
Yeah.
Situationally impotent, let's say.
More of a psychological impotence than it was.
Yeah, which I think says quite a bit about his relationship with Rhea?
Yeah, Rhaena. There's Rhaena and Bella. Bela. Bela's the youngest one that's
No. His old wife that he killed.
Oh.
Rhea, I think.
Rhea, yeah.
Yeah, it's not that he was impotent and unable to give her a child, although that might be part of it, but I think she just hated him because he sucked. Because he did kind of suck.
Could be. I have no idea how to score that. It seems like he did have a persistent performance problem. I don't know if it's nerves or because of situation or whatever, but he couldn't finish with Miss Sarah. He never could consummate with Rhea, and he couldn't go through with the act with Rhaenyra either. So there was something there, and he's overcome it. Maybe Lane has been really patient with him.
Yeah. I mean, Lena seemed kind of awesome. So
I do think Lena seems kind of awesome. Yeah.
Anyway, so Lena tries to convince Damon not to stay in Pentos. This is a scene with the books, I guess. Seems like he's actually reading these books. I don't know. Could be distracting himself from the conversation and the bad wine. But
well, she does say that this is what he spends his time doing, that he just pours over the stuff. And I think that I do wonder where they're going with this. One of the things I wondered in the instant take is if they're going to hint that Damon is going to independently discover this whole A Song of Ice and Fire prophecy and light a fire under him to like make sure that there's someone strong sitting on the Iron Throne, maybe himself, maybe someone he cares about. I don't, because like there's none of this like book of shit in the actual book. Like Damon would not be someone caught with a library card, I don't think, as he's depicted in the books.
Yeah, I will be a little underwhelmed by that because I feel like the former heir should already be well aware of that stuff. And if he has to go out and discover this through years of research, a decade of research, I'm going to be a little disappointed.
Yeah, we talked about that. Like, when does the knowledge get passed from heir to, you know, from king to heir? Do you do it as soon as someone is a presumptive heir? And then, like, what happens when, that heir gets replaced because you actually have a child of your own? I honestly don't know because, again, this is all show stuff. So
sure.
I'm guessing, but my guess was that Damon doesn't know. That he wouldn't know because Viserys always assumed that he was going to have, you know, I'm young, I got plenty of time with Aemon, we're going to have a bunch of kids.
Got all my fingers, got both of my arms, sure.
All fingers, both nuts, no problem.
We'll see how it goes. All right, we go to Kristen teaching the royal boys how to fight as Viserys and Lyanna watch. He takes it way too far and Harwin steps in to protect his son. I think this is a difficult scene to decipher exactly what's going on. It took me a few watches actually,
really?
To really get it. In my opinion, what's happening here and the whole reason this, you know, situation starts up and flares up like it does is because Harwin sees the training happening and he thinks that Kristen is not doing enough to teach his boys how to fight.
I think he's right.
Yeah, exactly. But I don't think it's like expressly spelled out here. There's a line that makes it somewhat clear, but it's mixed in with all of the stuff with Rhaenyra and Kristen too. So I think it's a little hard to follow, but I eventually got it. Or it might have just been me.
I thought it was interesting that they still show there's not any personal animosity between the children as of yet, because there's this thing where the boys are passing each other as they're switching targets. Mm-hmm. And Aegon pats Luke on the shoulder, like, you know, and kind of like you'd smack a guy coming off the bench on the butt, you know, if you're on the basketball team.
He slaps Jace's sword out of his hand, though.
Well, but that's later. But like, I'm saying this is in the beginning of the scene when they're switching positions. Luke shoulder checks Aemond. And yeah. Then Jace gets the shoulder pat from. So I thought that was, or maybe I misinterpreted that. Are you saying he slapped the training sword out at the very beginning of the scene?
I think Aegon does. Aegon slaps. Oh, yeah. The sword out of Jace's hand.
I thought he was just patting him on the shoulder or something. I guess I must have misinterpreted that.
Maybe.
Fuck. I gotta go stop podcasting. Think about things for a while.
Right. I had to watch this. I watched this scene like five times, so I'm pretty sure I got it right, but.
I also like Viserys because, again, you know, this is a guy who's just happy. He's riding high on another birth of another grandson, and he's like got Lionel up there, his best bud. He's like, oh, look, this is the stuff, isn't it? You know, I'm sitting here watching my another generation of strong Targaryens, and it just literally curdles right in front of him.
Yeah,
you know.
And especially and Lionel sees all this too, which doesn't fucking matter. The annoying thing about everything that Lionel does in this episode is it doesn't matter by the end.
Yeah. But yeah, I think it's also interesting that Allison's kids are all wearing the green, the battle color of House Hightower. It's shades of Joffrey being a little bit more Lannister than Baratheon there. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, Cole's just a shit. He's bullying these kids. He's training. He's refusing to train Harwin's kids as a personal insult to him.
Why doesn't Harwin train him himself? Like, maybe he doesn't have the time. Yeah. He's a commander of the City Watch.
I also think they just kind of hate each other. Like,
yeah.
There is personal animosity here because Sir Criston Cole is super jealous. He is super jealous and bitter, and he hates Rhaenyra, and he probably hates Harwin just about as much.
My interpretation is that he's not training these kids so that they will grow up weaker and less capable than Allison's kids. And if it comes to it, if there is a fight, you know, if Rhaenyra starts like trying to put the sword to kids, they'll be more prepared than Rhaenyra's kids.
It could be. I mean, that's definitely a long-term play. I thought this was more about personally provoking Harwin into doing something stupid, which mission accomplished, you know.
Oh, no, it becomes that by the end of the scene. Yeah. But I think where we start with him not training the Targaryen boys, Allison's boys as much. Mm-hmm. Or sorry,
I do wonder, doing that in front of King, if he could, like, he wouldn't get, you know, if the king wouldn't notice, because the king's paying attention. Like when Aegon, you know, like Viserys thought that Aegon was coming a little too high and mighty when he, you know, turns on a Harwin. It's like, how dare you lay a hand on me, the prince? And Viserys is like, Aegon, you know, get the fuck out of here. This is, and then you know, another thing happened. Even then, Viserys is like, I guess that's the thing, is if I was Viserys and the queen comes at me like, he beat a member of the king. Yeah, I remember when your Kingsguard beat the shit out of a lord, and we just kind of looked the other way on that.
And not just beat the shit out, but literally beat his head in.
Yeah, yeah, beat his brains out, rather.
Yeah. What was the outcome here, though? Harwin steps in at the moment, in my opinion, where it's going to truly get out of control. Aegon is about to, I think, kill Jace.
They're wooden wooden practice swords, but still.
But you hit a kid in the head with one of those? As hard as he looks like he's about to swing it?
And the books are described having a lead core, so they have like a realistic weight. So like it'd be like getting hit with a blackjack, and that can be fatal. And I don't know. Like I was kind of, you know, I'm unabashedly a Harwin stan. And I liked him just beating the fuck out of Christian Cole.
And I think he probably could take Christian in just a straight up fair fight.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, he sucker punches him here for sure, but that's what Christian wanted. But I don't know. He beats the piss out of him.
On the battlefield, I don't know. Because, like, the thing in the tournament, like, I think Sir Christian Cole can beat about anyone. You know, it's like the UFC. You know, anytime you're in a ring of sorts and you're fighting, it, who knows what can happen. But sure. I think in, like, it's one of those things, like, probably 8 out of 10 times or 4 out of 5 times, Harwin would win against Sir Christian Cole. He's just so big and strong. Yeah.
Yeah. All right, let's go over to Rhaenyra getting word of the incident in the yard, and she sneaks out through the secret tunnels and eavesdrops on Lionel and Harwin arguing about what he did and his relationship with Rhaenyra.
You know, watching this again, I had the realization that we were supposed to understand that Daemon, whenever we talked, that he was using his trademark, vestibule of eavesdropping and is behind the lattice work, that he's literally observing from the secret tunnels.
Okay.
Because it's exactly the face. Like, yeah. I'm like, oh, I feel stupid now. It's not like he was just standing behind some lattice work that he was in. It's like, yes, he was, but it's more complicated than that. He was literally in a secret passage.
He was in the
observing
walls.
Daemon's in the walls.
Like Dennis watching Frank eat human shit. Yeah.
Yep.
If you're an Always Sunny fan.
They wrote a few episodes of Always Sunny. It's only turnabouts, only fair play.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, Lionel again's giving the Leela service to his son. Like, you're saying this and I'm saying that, but like, bottom line is
people have eyes,
boy. And the king, for whatever reason, is not accepting the truth before his eyes. And that flimsy shield alone protects you. I thought that was great. And Rhaenyra, I think this is another scene where she realizes like how close the danger is to her. That like, maybe she thought that she was getting away with something slick, and she's, Punnett Squares, and we know a family up north that's had three, blah 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 blah, but she's now, for whatever reason, after 10 years, thinking, oh shit, I should have taken a little bit this all a little bit more seriously.
Yeah, 10 years and 3 brown haired children, it's finally sinking in. The thing that surprised me, I guess, is that she's using the secret tunnels right in front of her servants, so her servants know all about these tunnels now, or these secret passages in the castle.
It's been said by a lot that there is a conspicuous amount of just servant type people just all around, and they're always in the background, and people are wondering if, like, people are wondering if there is some connection to Larry Strong.
Maybe.
Like, if he's, because Masari's kind of disappeared. It seems like she was an informant to Otto only and didn't offer services to Allison, because Allison seems like to be entirely leaning on Laris.
Yeah, so she laments, no one is on her side here.
Yeah. I'm betting that Larry Strong probably knows a thing or two about these tunnels, and I'm betting he has a lot of the personal staff of King's Landing or the Red Keep on his payroll.
Yeah, I think it's a tell that all of them are wearing the Beetle brooch. But
wait, what?
No, I'm kidding.
Oh, I was gonna say, like, holy shit! I didn't see that. Like, there's a handmaid wearing the. By the way, since you brought it up, corrections, HBO realized, cause like people are saying, oh, it's a beetle, it's a bee, it's this, it's that. Oh, it's because this, and it's supposed to be a lightning bug, a firefly.
Oh,
is that sigil?
Okay. Sure.
Which we'll talk about when we get to it. The other thing, if I could head off the half 100 emails I'll get about Aemond, this is not the same Aemond that's at the wall in the time of Jon Snow.
Okay, he would have to be almost 200 years old, and that's...
Yeah, that. Well, I mean, I don't think people, like, the average person, like, keeps track of the timeline and all that, but that Aemond is going to be born much later of another generation of Targaryens, and it's not the same name, not the same Targaryen.
Cool. Rhaenyra returns to her chambers, where Laenor and his friend, Carl, show up. Very drunk and celebrating the war to come with Dorne and the Triarchy. Laenor's looking forward to the adventure of the battle, but Rhaenyra commands him to stay in King's Landing by her side.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing is, like, this guy I feel is having a similar thoughts as Daemon, where he's just restless. Like, I'm a knight, I'm a warrior, man. It's not just about going off and carousing with Carl. I need to, you know, quicken my blood and feel the thrill of combat and all that. And also Rhaenyra is like, are you fucking crazy? Like, am I the only one that's gone through the secret passages and heard all the hot goss about us going around? Because we are we're kind of infamous.
I feel like little bit of it is getting Carl out alone on a boat as well.
It's a little bit,
more private,
but I think
of a scenario.
I don't like Rhaenyra says, he's had, clearly Carl's here, but also he's had his fair share of lusty lads and the finest wines and the most expensive horses. Like he, but I think he's bored. I think he wants to go out there and be a warrior like he's supposed to be. And he's a good one. You know, we saw him. It's not like Daemon single-handedly won the Battle of Stepstones. He got all the lion's share of the glory, but you know, it was his strategy and Sea Smoke that kind of won the day.
Yeah, and I think it's a couple of things are implied here. I think it's implied in Laenor's tone that they have had an argument over whether to stay or leave King's Landing Dragonstone over the years. And of course, she wanted to stay to make sure that Alison didn't get a hold on her father too deeply. But the other thing that's implied here is sort of the unintended consequences of being the secret father, the secret non-father of these kids, right? He has to make it look like he is there for his children and his wife, his family. He can't just go off and live in Dragonstone or some other place to be away from all this drama. He's got to stick by their side.
Yeah. To your point about the servants observing the passage, I thought it was interesting that Rhaenyra seems to be like, lower your tone and don't talk this way, even though they're in their inner chambers in utter privacy. And I wonder if that's because she's like, well, if I know about the tunnels and I can listen in, who else knows about them?
And she just eavesdropped on a conversation where Lionel was yelling about it. So
exactly.
I think she understands the sound carries a bit.
Exactly. They mentioned that there's this new Tyroshi general who dyes his beard purple and wears women's frocks. I wonder if that's a fun reference to the book description of Dario Naharis.
I was wondering about that too, yeah.
Because he's got the famous triple forked purple beard, the flashy gold tooth, and he's described as very flamboyant in his dress to where you could see like maybe a... It is funny this gay man is like talking shit about this guy.
The flamboyancy of somebody else.
Who's living in an unconventional lifestyle across the sea, but... It just goes to show. But yeah, even if it's the Tyroshi tend to be kind of that, you know, they dye their hair and their beards crazy colors, gold, purple, scarlet, blue. So I thought that was a kind of little fun reference.
Yeah. All right, let's go to Laena's daughter trying to hatch her dragon egg. She feels left out without a dragon. And Daemon is ignoring her. That's not helping. Laena comforts her, and then goes to Daemon to give him the news about Rhaenyra's latest child and try and convince him again to go back to Westeros.
Yeah. Does he write that his son bears a remarkable likeness to the commander of the City Watch?
Surprise.
I was disappointed. I don't know why I like Daemon. He's such a shit. But I was disappointed to hear that he's only paying attention to the daughter that has a dragon.
Yeah.
And the other one is just left and neglected. And that's sad.
It is. And it's so sad, too, the way, like, this is the daughter trying to seek the approval of her father, too, right?
Right.
Like, trying to hatch this dragon, holding it up just desperately, hoping the fire will hatch it. That's sad.
Yeah, they dropped some dragon lore on us. Apparently, half of all dragon eggs don't hatch.
Wow.
It's and apparently they don't lay that many clutches too, because like dragon eggs are still as many as we've met 8, I think, by my count. We haven't seen there's been referenced 8. We've seen 7. because we didn't see they name checked Aegon's dragon Sunfire, but we haven't seen him yet. The prettiest dragon in all the realm. But like, you know, you'd think with all those dragons and countless, you know, there's even more on Dragonstone and there's more in the dragon pits. You'd think they would have a steady supply of eggs, but still a short supply.
Yeah, that's why Viserys says it's a handsome gift in this next scene here.
Yeah, and he's the other thing that disappointed with Daemon is like, you know, not only is he dismissive to Laena here, but he's also kind of cruel. You know, every time she tries to show some genuine concern about, like, you're not sleeping, you know, he's like, well, how can I with you hanging, you know, lurking about, like, you know, putting everything on her. He's a real dick.
He is, for sure. But he's fun to watch. I agree with you.
He is fun to
watch. I don't necessarily
watch.
Like him, but I enjoy watching him.
And he's not an out-and-out villain. He's just a real he's just a real selfish prick. But she gets him. She scores a point where she's like, well, you can talk whatever shit you want, but you are not the man that I married, and you're more than this, Daemon. Mm-hmm. And I think that scores a point with him, because that's kind of the reason he is kind of like searching for something, some meaning to do with his life. Because he sees himself as destined for greatness, and look at it, he's just, you know, playing second rate dragon cell sword over here.
Yeah, it's that second son complex.
Mm-hmm.
All right, over on the small council, Rhaenyra and Allison have a disagreement over a small matter, and it blows up into a bigger disagreement about how to handle the Triarchy. Rhaenyra apologizes and offers an alliance via marriage between her eldest son, Jacerys, and Allison's daughter, Helaena, as well as a dragon egg for Aemond. Allison says, yeah, we'll consider it, and then afterward discusses Rhaenyra's proposal with Viserys. He is in favor, she is not. Surprise, surprise.
She's got the unfortunate milk leaking situation that, you know, like all the lords, like, oh God, you know, we're freshly reminded a woman's on the council.
Right. She's like, seven hells or whatever it is.
Right. Yeah. I thought that it's interesting that Allison's on the table too. I wonder if she muscled her way how long it took past the previous episode for her to muscle her way onto the council. Cause it seems like, well, if Rhaenyra is going to be there, I'm going to fucking be there.
Yeah.
This is
their battlefield now, right?
Yeah. Also, we see there's been some changes as a lot of people, we still have, Tyland Lannister as the master of ships. Mm-hmm. We still got Lord Beesbury as the master of coin.
For how much longer? It's hard to say.
But... Yeah, and is he even still there? Yeah. I wasn't sure if he was deaf or starting to slip. But we also have Lord Jasper Wilde, who is the new master of laws. He gets a line. I don't think he's actually credited or he's named, but this is the guy who...
guy with a very dark beard.
Yeah, the guy that talks about how you can't trust the Dorne and questions where Daemon is and all this, that's Jasper Wilde. He's called the Iron Rod. The maesters say because of his strict and unyielding code of justice as the master of laws. But Mushroom says it's because of the stiffness of his prick.
Sure. Both can
I
be
report,
true.
You decide. but yeah, what do you think? We also have a new young Grand Maester. This is, we had Maester Malos. This was Orwile, who was the guy who was always asking, hey, can we cauterize this instead of this? Hey, can we try this remedy instead of the same shit we've all been doing? And I wonder if the reason Viserys is still upright and doing as well as he was in this episode is because we got some new blood with some new thoughts and new ideas in here.
Yeah. They didn't say, oh, he's got a cough, leech him.
Yeah, he looks terrible, but he wasn't.
He's alive.
He didn't collapse even once this episode.
He did not. That's progress, in my opinion.
But he was also only on his feet for like 5 seconds. Most of the time he spent on a chair under a bunch of furs. So, yeah.
Plus, he's got less weight. You know, how much does an arm weigh, right? You could probably collapse just under the weight of an arm. That might make the
literally
difference.
Dead weight. Get out of there. Get out of there. But I question Rhaenyra's political strategy of give him 3 or 4 solid body shots to the queen and her chosen strategy, and then at the last minute trying, like, if you knew you were going to offer this, why then? This is Rhaenyra's old impatience and the fact that, like, her and Alicent are beyond being done with each other. But if you're going to make this handsome offer, why not just for one fucking small council session let everything slide? Just butter up the queen a little bit.
Yeah, agree with her. So yes, I agree with the queen's assessment.
Because Alicent just openly seething, like everything that she says. She'd say, you know, it's like there's nothing to Rhaenyra. Because I think Rhaenyra's given, you know, for on a scale of one to strong, she's given pretty leal advice to the king as far as, you know, it's.
Yeah, I think Alicent has lost her damn mind here, like saying, oh, we can't afford to pin down the most valuable economic location in the entirety of your civilization, as far as I can tell.
Right, right.
That's insanity. Saying you can't afford that while Viserys is off making 10-year models of solid marble seems a little hard to swallow.
Sure.
How much do the people have to sacrifice for that thing, huh?
Yeah. I thought it was interesting to watch Lord Strong's face during this, though, because Viserys is just completely in love with this idea. But Lord Strong is... Maybe it's because he sees it as the, like, I think Rhaenyra is taking this as an open offer. I'm marrying my firstborn heir to the king or heir to me, who will be queen, to your daughter, making her, guaranteeing that she'll be queen. But I think a lot of people in the room are like, hey, why don't you marry my bastard? Why don't you take your pure-blooded, you know, rightful and true-born daughter and marry him off to my bastard,
in line for the throne. Let's not forget that, right? It's not like it's a non-offer.
But man,
it's not like it's insulting.
If the realm had any hope of backing her in a succession war, this whole bastard children and the fact that it's such an open secret and she's been so careless guarding it, like I think her position is so fucking precarious here.
Yeah,
and to her credit, she knows. She knows.
She does. Yeah, I mean, this is like, if you want to look at it long term, this is probably the best possible scenario, is to just marry the two houses together. And they eventually become one on the throne. But
yeah, it's just trying to do.
You can't at this point. It's too far gone. The relationship.
Mm-hmm. For the third scene in a row, Viserys sees his hopes dashed and another piece of him dies.
This time it's toes.
It's gotta be his left foot.
and then you're all off balance. I mean, you can't lose that much of your left side and still stand. Alicent, this is the scene where she calls Rhaenyra's kids plain featured. Clearly funny. Somebody has a thing for Targaryens. We were wondering if it was Daemon. I think it's Alicent. She's got that Targaryen fetish.
Well, you acquire taste through exposure.
Fair. There's still lots of hot D left to talk about. We'll be right back after the break.
We're getting geared up for the 6th annual Summer Badass Fest. And while we're working on a slate of apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make.
Just like last year, we're kicking off Badass Season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and Bald Move fans that just want to have a great time.
Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret. Hush, hush. No hints. Except, it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre. We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of Bald Movers.
Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was. And those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim. Order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar. Then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited.
It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live.
Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. The thrills of Kings Island just minutes away, and I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday.
Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live. Here are the highlights coming up this week on Bald Move.
We've got lots of ongoing coverage this week, from book versus show comparisons for Hot D to the latest very special episode of Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? But there are a couple of main events this week you need to know about.
Firstly, we've got a brand new commission podcast out this Tuesday covering the Raid 2, sometimes subtitled Retaliation. If you're a fan of martial arts films, this is one you don't want to miss. Iko Uwe is a rising star in the action movie world, and it's easy to see why. Join us on Tuesday as we dive into the bigger, badder sequel to The Raid, try and figure out which is better.
Then on Thursday, we're covering the season finale of Hulu's excellent period drama, Shogun. We've been waiting all season to see what Toranaga Sama's plan is, or if he even has one. It all comes down to this, and we couldn't be more excited. Join us on Thursday for what's sure to be an epic Shogun season finale podcast, and to find out if we plan to cover any related materials.
You can find these and many other great podcasts by searching for Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app. And now, back to Hot D. All right, next up, Lionel tries to resign as Hand of the King, but he refuses to say why he wants to resign, which is, of course, because the rumors of Harwin and Rhaenyra are true. So Viserys refuses his resignation. And then Lionel asks to escort Harwin back to Harrenhal, which Viserys grants.
Because that's the thing, Viserys isn't stupid. Like, there's that thing at the end where he's like, yeah, that'd probably be best if he's just gone. You know, like, he's not going to come and out his daughter. He's not going to hear people talk. But, like, I said, it's not that Viserys is willfully blind. He just loves Rhaenyra and doesn't want this shit to blow up and... Yeah.
He's being willfully ignorant here, but he knows it. In truth, he knows it's
he's ignorant, but it's a calculated ignorance, maybe is how you'd say it.
Sure. Yeah. I was so angry when Lionel resigned or tried to resign. I was like, God damn it. This is the one guy I like. I don't want him to A, leave the story.
Right.
So I would get less of him. And B, I think Viserys needs this guy around.
He does.
And then by the end, all of my hopes and dreams were dashed.
That's the thing. Like, what a roller coaster for you. Because like, I was like, when he's like, let me take him back to Harrenhal, I'm like, oh no, we're at this point in the story. And because I knew he died. It's a fact in the book that he and Harwin die at Harrenhal.
Uh-huh.
But in Fire and Blood fashion, it was the Archmaester trying to figure out what the fuck happened. You know, here are the prime suspects. Is it Daemon? Because he was wanting to clear a path to his niece again. He's trying to fixate on that. Was it the king himself who thought this was a tidy way to disabuse all the suspicion? Was it this person? That's fucking Larry Strong.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a huge roller coaster.
Because
I'm like, oh no, he's resigning and I'm on the downhill. And then the king won't let him. I'm back on the upswing.
Yeah.
And then by the end of the episode, okay, he's getting Harwin out of here too. That's important. That's good.
Yeah.
And then all hope lost by the end. God. Who is there to root for? Rhaenyra. I guess.
Vhagar. I'm on team Vhagar, you know?
Sure. Yeah, I'm gonna just root for the dragons from now on. Yep, can't go wrong. Yep. Rooting for dragons.
They're good boys and girls, Jim, and they won't do us dirty, I'm sure.
All right, Alicent meets privately with Larys Strong, where she tells him of her problems
and laments that no one in King's Landing is taking my side. In all of King's Landing, is there no one to take my side? Which I like this line a lot, because this immediately calls back to where we left her as a kid, right? With Larry whispering in her ear and trying to prove that he is the ally that she needs when she was in another low moment after having just lost her father as Hand of the King. This is all calling back to that. And it's amazing to me that she's feeling yet again after 10 years that she still has no allies.
Right. Yeah. And it also
it's ironic she's saying it in the face of the man who is her one ally.
Yeah. And it's also like they've shown that this has been a cozy relationship that's built up over mm-hmm. the years. You know, they're having private dinners together. This was
and
very
she's got Kristen Cole. She's got tons of allies. I don't know what
she's got
about.
Allies. She's got allies. This is very shades of Henry II. You know, the famous his lords rhetorically, who will rid me of this troublesome priest who is excommunicating all my favorite bishops and stuff? And then surprise, surprise, mm-hmm. four of his lords go and kill the dude. I think Allison is, this might be the last of her wretched naivete, mm-hmm. but like, I thought that what Larry is right on, that she was asking him, make a move to get my father back into in King's Landing, because I gotta have somebody being leal to me.
I viewed it more as her just venting.
Really?
But I'm not like...
I don't think she was on board with burning two men to death and God knows how many servants. Like, I think that was... But like, I think that she was hoping that he would maneuver and maybe... Yeah, I'm trying to say, what would he do? Like, reveal the secret of Harwin? I don't know. Maybe then it's just like, yes, like, then you just let the chips fall where they may. And how would Viserys, you know, like, Larry would do it in a way that is sneaky and wouldn't come back on her, probably. But yeah.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I didn't read it as a request. I read it as a vent session. Like she did with Kristen, you know? She's talking shit because she's frustrated.
Man, I was really hoping that we would have a Larry and Harry brother show, like we have with Tyrion and
that's the thing, man. I am
and Jaime, and now it's gone because I said there's a big theory that Larys is behind the fire, but they'd shown them being pretty warm relationship and not like hating each other or anything, and so I'm like, oh well, yeah, probably not. It's probably Daemon, probably that fucker. But now it's like, wow, they're really, really painting him dark. Like this monologue he gives at the end is psychotic.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, having people to love you is just a weakness. It's just an entanglement. It's better be unencumbered so you can just take anyone out at any time, my queen. Mm-hmm. It's like a fucking threat on top of like, holy moly. He's like, I did everything that you want. And also, there's nobody I can't touch in this realm. You know, including queens, maybe.
He's got to realize, though, that she is his only path to power currently, right? He would have to set up something else to replace her if he were ever going to make a move.
So, again, this is not book speculation, because I discounted the fact that he was that he was the culprit here. But I felt like at the end of that scene that he'd kind of trapped Allison too, because he's got like he could make her complicit in this sin, that he's like, I was just doing what the queen wanted me to do. What loyal servant of the realm wouldn't do that? I even put my own father and brother to the sword. You know, that's how loyal I am, and it would make her look real bad. And I think she realizes that calculus. So like, yes, he is her only path of power, but not only does she owe him something, but also I think she's afraid of him because he can.
There's definitely an implied threat when he says, I feel certain you will reward me.
Yeah,
there's an implied threat in there. I do agree with that. We can talk about that more when we get there, I guess.
Yeah, we kind of skipped ahead a bit. Yeah.
Yeah, just a little bit. Here's the other thing about this conversation that I found weird. It's when, you know, she tells him, Larry, that Lionel tried to resign and Viserys said no. And Laris's response here is, his honor has always been a millstone around his esteemed neck. And I'm like, seriously, dude, he was the second most powerful person in the entire kingdom. He literally couldn't rise any higher than he did. And now suddenly his honor that got him there is a millstone around his neck. That's weird. Yeah. That's a weird way to look at it.
It's fucked up. Like, maybe he's like, he should have kept climbing. You're so close to the throne. I wouldn't have stopped. You know, I don't know. Cause you're right. That's a good way to look at it.
There is no path to the throne for him. He literally rose as high as he possibly could.
I did like his speech about the truth has many flavors. Like, yeah, the king knows, but he knows in a way that's not going to have his daughter doomed to exile and death. Mm-hmm. And like that, whereas Alicent is extremely black and white at this point, which is going to probably hamper her political ambitions, if I were to guess.
Yeah. And this is the scene I was talking about where Alicent states that she would not turn a blind eye to her children's transgressions. And I think that's true based on what we saw her do with Aegon over the pig joke. Mm-hmm. But the other thing that is a little disturbing here is Alicent's talking about not having her daddy around so that he can be partial to her. So she's all pissed off. That's kind of scary. Like, she's okay with bias as long as it works in her favor, but it's not currently. Yeah. So she's getting all pissy about it.
Yeah. She wants that leal service, but only to her.
Mm-hmm.
Not to the realm.
Fair. I understand it, but also that's not going to make me like you anymore for sure.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that's a little more silly here is there's a servant who walks in and, you know, they're in the middle of this very serious and very sensitive conversation. And so Alicent's like, not now, and sends her away. If you're the servant, how long do you wait before you try again? It's like 10 minutes. You give them 10 minutes. You walk back in and maybe get your head taken off.
I think the correct answer is you stand near the door until Larry comes out. And then you check in.
Okay. That makes sense. Or if you get called in, I guess. Yeah, then you go in.
Yeah, they ring the bell.
Yeah. I don't think you try a second time before something changes.
Mm-hmm.
But what if he uses the secret passages? She could be standing out there all night. If he goes through one of the walls?
Yeah, I guess that's true. Like but I don't think he's not that stupid, right? He's
I don't think so. If he's seen, he needs to go out the front door. Yeah. All right. Laris goes to the dungeons where he picks out a few prisoners who are to be executed and offers them mercy in exchange for cutting out their tongues and working for him. And they accept. And here's where we see the very conspicuous, what I thought was a beetle. Apparently, it's a firefly walking stick, making sure that you know that in the next scenes where they burn Harrenhal, or the castle heron or whatever, it's connected to Laris.
One of the valid criticisms, there's some valid criticisms in the show. One of the valid criticisms I saw of this particular episode is how stupid is it that this spy guy is conspicuously tying his minions to himself, his personal sigil. And to that I reply, you're right, that's indefensible.
It's pretty dumb.
But I also think it's going to be useful for us as audience members to track his minions and it's very easy for us. Like, it's kind of like a Clark Kent Superman thing. You're supposed to understand that, like, this is super spycraft in Westeros, even though it's patently ridiculous that someone wouldn't recognize Superman the second he puts on fucking glasses. You know,
totally.
It's one of those suspension of disbelief. You either got to go with it that nobody would ever, you know, like you take the trouble to cut these guys' tongues out and then you label them House Larry Strong.
I think the only reason this is silly is because it matches the symbol on his cane. And if it didn't, if it was just a symbol that he used to denote
personally,
I mean, even then, why put a symbol on them at all?
Because if any of them get caught, it's a de facto conspiracy.
Yeah.
You know, if it's just one guy gets caught and the other guys, but you know, they're all wearing the same fucking pin. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I did think that the firefly is a nice touch because its torch burns green, but it's not a steady source of light. It flickers on and flickers off. And I think it's kind of showing he is her leal servant, but he can turn that beacon off and on in an instant. I think that's where they're going with this anyway.
All right, let's move over to Lena trying to give birth to another child, but it goes wrong. She can't. And in order to, I guess, die what she considers a dragon rider's death, she goes out to Vhagar and has him Dracarys her and the baby to death. This obviously is them putting the exact same decision that Viserys had to make with Emma to Daemon. Yeah. You know, lose them both or try to save the baby. He doesn't have to make that choice because she makes it for him. And really makes it for herself is the key thing.
That's
here.
The key. Because I think it's pretty clear that I think Daemon, I don't think Daemon had any interest in using the knife and all that kind of stuff personally.
Because I don't think he has an interest in having another kid or even the ones he's got already.
I don't think he cares about a succession to this point. Maybe if he ever got an Iron Throne, he'd change his tune. But I agree. I did think it was funny that she was able to escape, essentially. In this condition, she just rushes from her bed and gets out to Vhagar. Also, I want to point out you did misgender Vhagar. That's a she dragon.
Oh, okay.
But you can be forgiven because apparently the only way the maesters mark which one is a dragon and which one's a she dragon is if a dragon happens to lay eggs, they make a note that, oh, yeah, this turns out is a her.
So they don't know until after the fact?
I think so. I think that's canonical. I didn't intend to do this dissertation until you called Vhagar a he. Uh-huh. So like, but I'm pretty sure that's made a point in the world of Ice and Fire.
I mean, I wouldn't want to go poking around the sensitive bits of dragons either.
Yeah,
to try and
you
want to
go sex a dragon?
Sex.
How's that work? No,
no, a chicken maybe a dragon? No,
sure, yeah.
Have two births in one episode, right? This is supposed to bookend or mirror what's happening with Rhaenyra as well. So
yeah,
and
it also is nice, an interesting mirror of the pilot because you know we had a big death and childbirth there, but this is, you know, she said she wanted to go out like a dragon rider, and in the end she does. And I thought it was cool that Vhagar is kind of like confused and like, you want me to what now? But then I think you understand that the dragon kind of gets it, like, oh, this is this is already something that's happening. This is a merciful. That's a little way I got it. It'd be funny if she ate her though. But she didn't. She didn't. She left her smoking corpse there, and so did Daemon. Daemon left her smoking corpse out there to be exposed as well.
To be fair, it's hot. It's still very hot.
It's true. That's dragon fire ashes, man.
Yeah.
But I also Daemon, like, I think he was out there to what, stop her? Because he acted shocked and saddened that There was a tenderness there when he said, my poor brave girl, when he realized that this is going to be the end and his shock and sorrow. I think he's, again, I don't think this is for show. I think he did love and admire Lena as much as he could in his damaged state.
Yeah, I mean, he married her at some point, right? I mean, they clearly were fond of each other somewhere along the way.
I do wonder where he got this coldness, though, because like it's the opposite of Viserys. Viserys is super warm and like all about the family. And, you know, I never got the idea that Balon was like some bastard that didn't love his kids and didn't. Yeah, Daemon just gone bad, man.
Second son syndrome.
Second son syndrome.
All right. Harwin says goodbye to Rhaenyra and his children, who have only now figured out that he's their father. At least the eldest of them has.
Rhaenyra's answer is not great to, like, am I a bastard, mommy? Well, you're a Targaryen, and that's all that matters.
Yeah.
I mean, this kid's like 10. Lie to him. All right. I think it's appropriate to tell white lies to children when the truth is devastating. You know, wait till he's older if he wants to know.
Mm hmm. And then Rhaenyra goes to Laenor to tell him that it's time to leave King's Landing for Dragonstone. Laenor doesn't want to leave his paramour behind, so Rhaenyra allows him to bring Carl, which I thought was sweet. Especially after losing her lover.
This is insane from Rhaenyra's perspective.
Insane?
Yeah, like things are this bad. Your father is in poor health. You're going to flee the capital?
Oh, yeah. No, she's feeling the pressure and she's just cutting and running. She's scared.
She's folding. I think this is just a bad. This is politically bad. This is, you know, this is, and then
and it's also gonna look super bad. The timing of it, because she leaves right as Harwin leaves, and it's gonna be pretty obvious that like there's nothing left for her in King's Landing, so she left. Now that
they're bastardizing Corliss's quote, which is a wise sailor sails around or meets it head on, but they don't let the storm catch him unawares. Now that's changed into a wise sailor flees before the storm arrives. Yeah. Corliss' approach still gets you to your destination.
Yeah.
Rhaenyra and Laenor has lost sight of their destination. And it's just like by getting out. And I think that is telling that the Corliss had the right of it and they fucked it up. They fucked up his wise words.
Yeah, I'm with you. But I don't know. I like seeing Laenor happy. I feel like Laenor has done nothing to deserve any of the shitstorm that's going down on him. No. So when he gets a little bit of, you know, niceties from Rhaenyra here, I'm happy for him.
Yeah.
And then finally, Lionel and Harwin are burned to death in their sleep. This is all going to take place under a sort of a narration from Laris that we'll get to at the end of the scene. But they're burned to death in their sleep. Rhaenyra and her entourage arrive at Dragonstone. Viserys misses Aemma. He's kissing the ring and crying. Daemon has no words for his children over their mother's death. But Laris has words about those children, about all children. He says... he also has some words about what happened to Harwin and Lionel, claiming that Alicent wished for their deaths and that she should write to her father now. A lot of stuff here. I was definitely wrong about Lionel maybe not dying in this. I assumed that there was some escape here for him because I don't know why they would have adjoining rooms, didn't have exits out.
I don't think that's what we're supposed to understand happened.
Fire in the hallway, too.
Just that they'd set that wing on fire and it gone, but like they were essentially barricaded in their rooms with no way out. They could jump out the window.
Either way, they cart out two bodies conspicuously at the end of the scene that are definitely supposed to be Harwin and Lionel. So
I thought so in the first night, but yeah. Plus, I also knew in the books that they both died in this fire.
Yep, fair, that helps.
Yeah. But they can always pitch curveballs in this show. They don't always go right down the middle.
Yeah, I think it's super interesting looking at how Rhaenyra approaches Dragonstone. You know, she's got her whole entourage here. She doesn't look happy about having this castle. She looks almost trepidatious about going in there.
She should be. She's running away from the field of battle, and it's a mistake.
Yeah, but you would show that by her looking longingly back at King's Landing but arriving at the new destination and looking at it as if it's something to be feared, I think doesn't convey quite the same idea. Yeah, this is more like there's an ominous quality to Dragonstone itself. But I could be wrong about that.
Well, we'll see.
Yeah. And then, boy, what do you say about Laris?
Crazy fucker. I mean, if you can't count on, like, again, there's no evidence that, like, Harwin bullied this guy or that Lionel thought he was a piece of shit because he had the club foot. Seemed like he was supported his son, got him a position in the black cells. I think you're supposed to understand that he's the, as I mentioned, the Lord High Confessor at this point. There's no evidence that there's any reason for him to hate his, like, you know, his brother and his father. And maybe he doesn't. Maybe he's just like a Dexter type, and he's just like, this is just I'm essentially doing an Excel spreadsheet here.
Yeah,
and
he's sacrificing a pawn to get in position for the checkmate. Yeah, it's. Whew.
But he's not wired. There's not wired in any way that I could understand, and that's got to probably be scary to Alicent too, because Alicent is many things, but she is not a psychotic person. You know,
doesn't seem like it.
Yeah.
Laris clearly helped these assassins get inside Harrenhal. Or the castle at Harren. Is that what it's called?
It's Harrenhal.
It's Harrenhal. I thought, okay, Harrenhal.
It's Harren the Black's castle, also known as Harrenhal.
Okay, cool. He helped them get inside, but I guess how is the question? Secret tunnels? Because he wasn't there. He couldn't use his authority or familial connection to get him in, so he must have just.
It does show that
in.
He has some pretty wide ranging power too, maybe,
or knowledge of Harrenhal, of his home. that he could have used to sneak them in.
You're 100% right, too. That is his home. He grew up there, so he knows it better than anybody.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I'm looking forward to seeing more of this, but God, there are not a lot of people to root for at this point.
No.
And one of them that I'm rooting for is clearly on death's door, Viserys.
Yeah. Yeah, I wonder how many, you got any over-unders on how many episodes he makes it?
What are we, four from the end? Seven, eight, nine, ten?
Four more.
Two more. I think he's going to die in two episodes. I know that's, you would say three because the penultimate episode is always the one where shit goes wild, but true. I'm saying two. Going to surprise us.
Yeah, it's... I keep on readjusting where I think they're going to end the season at. I don't know. It's I'm wondering if they will let him go over all the way to the penultimate and just, you know, we're going to save all of the real dance until the next season.
And the biggest question is, does Otto come back? Can Viserys welcome him back after this?
Yeah, Viserys, this is his hand. Like, Allison has a lot of power and a lot of soft power and even a lot of, seems like a hard power at this point, but she can't make the king take him back his hand if he thinks he's full of shit. So we'll see. I'm wondering how much politics will be played there and what the hand's demeanor is going to be now that he's been brought back. Is he going to be a little bit more, because he's kind of toady before. Is he going to have a little bit more flexing, a little bit more swagger?
And these circumstances are suspicious at best, right? Like, okay, I get it, fires can just happen, but boy, this is the hand of the king. This is a direct attack on the king himself if there's any suspicion that someone perpetrated this.
I'm curious to see if there is going to be suspicion.
Yeah, me too. I really want to know, is Viserys going to look at this event and say someone is coming at us? Yeah. Or is he just going to be like, well, fires happen.
Yeah.
Give me the next hand.
Yeah. And I'm not sure if would that be willful ignorance or would that be the skill of Larry the Strong, you know?
Yeah. Good question.
Anything else to talk about, Jim?
No, I think that's about it.
We're going to take a couple days off to let the feedback collect. If you'd like to send us your thoughts on this episode or anything really regarding the House of the Dragon, hotd@baldmove.com is where you want to send those emails. We'll be back Thursday to discuss all your thoughts, any additional thoughts we have, and also have a Maester's Corner where I think Anthony's going to talk about the view of blood and semen. He said he texted me this morning. I'm like, okay, so it's essentially the Metallica Load cover.
Yes,
correct. We're gonna be talking about that, and then I think I'm going to do a little bit of Dreamfire egg speculation in the Maester's Corner. So look forward to that. Hotd@baldmove.com for the feedback. Follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/baldmove, to keep up with all of our schedules and releases. And if you want to get this ad free. If you want to join in on our very fabulous Instant Talk live reaction podcast each Sunday after the episode, check out our support page, support.baldmove.com. Find out about joining the club. Until Thursday, I'm your host, Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
See ya.